This is Surviving the Music Industry.
That sounds sick.
I didn't think about how that sounded.
Hey, folks, this is Brandon coming back at you. As I do every week, as I come and I don't do a whole lot, but I talk to pretty rad people, and then you hear me complain about my life, because I'm the one surviving the music industry. Everybody else seems to be doing okay. Well, not really. I don't know. I don't know where you guys fit in that mold, but then again, this is where we are. 2020. Congratulations. We are in the same shitstorm in a fecal matter swirl of a fan tornado. So, all that being said, I hope you guys are doing okay. If you're listening to this, you have to be doing okay, because if you're not doing okay and you're listening to this, you dialed the wrong number. 911 should have been it. But nonetheless, thanks for listening. Again, I'm Brandon. You're listening to SMI. Get a hold of us at SMI Podcast or at Unofficial Brandon. Sometimes I throw stuff up the left, I throw stuff around. Sometimes I just don't know what I'm doing. But we're out there in the old interwebs. Oh, smipodcast.com. Send us some email for what that's worth. Don't pitch yourself more than anything. You'd be amazed how many people want to pitch to come on the show through that channel, which I guess if it's warranted, you know, if you feel like you can hang with the guests that we've had so far, sure. But at the same time, you probably don't. You probably won't be welcome. There's a way to do it. And sometimes people just don't have the way. So, I don't know. I mean, instead of just denying them over email, I end up ghosting them. Because I'm a professional ghoster. Call me Casper. That's what I end up doing. I'm a runner. I run away from my problems. I avoid them. If the IRS wasn't a thing, I'd run away from the government. But I can't. Can't escape any of this political shit. It's out there. Everywhere. It's in my jokes. It's in the conversation. I guess if you're trying to run away from the idea of anything political in these debates, can't do it. I mean, I've already talked about this before in a setup to an episode, but you can't run away from your problems, and this is a big problem in America, the whole presidential election. Something happened with Biden and his son, and then, I mean, people are just throwing monkey shit across the aisles, and it's reaching into their diapers and throwing their own monkey shit. That's what the reference is. But man, it is just an insane time to be alive, and that's an understatement, and we're all just trying to make the best of a really bad situation. It's just like vacation when you were 8 years old and you weren't the favorite child, but you're stuck in the middle between the two favorites, and then you're just on the road and you're just stuck in a place that you don't even want to be, and let alone your parents don't even want you there to begin with. Whew, kind of went on a tangent there for a second. But that's honestly for the people out there. You're throwing your hands up in the air and you don't know what to do. That's sometimes what I end up doing. I mean, I tried to escape this past weekend. If you guys have been keeping up on the show, I went out into the woods. I left with this little demon child that I own, and we did the hiking. We left, we got out, we got untouched by technology. And you know what? It was a lot of fun. He was great. He didn't complain. We survived. We had food. We laughed. We cried. We smoked cigarettes. He's 7. His lungs are young, okay? He can recoup. I'm just kidding. He did have coffee for the first time. He took it like a Vietnam vet. I mean, he took it like a champ. He loved it. I don't know. Whiskey is next. But life is going okay for me in reality. It's just this whole headspace of a situation of life. I just feel like I'm just kind of rambling right now because that's the way my mind is working right now. My mind just feels like it's all over the place because I don't know what people want to hear, what probably they should hear. And I think that's the whole issue of everything in America right now. And I can only speak for America because I live in America right now. But everything is just across the board and it's crazy and you don't know what to do. So, most of the time, people just make the wrong decisions in a situation like this. What's the learning lesson here? Make the right decision. How do you know what the right decision is? Well, if you're not an asshole, or you're not voting for the asshole, or you're not, you know, standing up for the asshole, you better good chance you're not the asshole. Okay? That's something that we all need on this planet, or less assholes. You have to have an asshole. I mean, things just got to come out of the asshole. And that's why you got to have those assholes. But in the end, don't be one. All right? I mean, I really don't know where that's going more than anything. But I really hope everybody's doing well and okay during this crazy time. And you're doing your part, humanity. You're being nice. You're being kind. You're just doing the thing, being the best human you can be. And I have to say that I had a great human being conversation. I never met Melody. It was great to get to know her a little bit. We kind of did the thing. We talked a little bit of history, but then it got into something deeper and meaningful, I feel like, to both of us. And we got there. She mentioned some things that I feel like she's never mentioned in conversations before. And so I'm appreciative of that. She's a real human, and we had a great human conversation. Melody Federer, that's who I'm talking about. She's on the show today. And I did not know Melody before this. I was introduced to her by a publicist, a really rad publicist I really like. There's not too many of them that I just really like out there in the planet. But this one I like, and I respect the people that she works with. And I mean, point in case, Melody's a songwriter. I think she's a songwriter at heart, and we talk about that a little bit. But I mean, she's got tracks and she's worked with, and she's co-written, and she's just produced tracks. I mean, she's done the thing with just about a lot of people in different genres that you could probably think about, from Burt Bacharach, Hilary Duff, to Kelly Rowland, to Michael Bublé, Jacob Whitesides. I mean, it's a little bit across the board genre-ly speaking. And it feels weird to be talking about a genre. And she nails it perfectly. Genre agnostic. It's this thing of, it's just out there in the nebulous of the world. It exists. It's out there. But we're not going to call it out. Because why? What's the point? So I think the biggest thing is that you just got to go check out the music for yourself. Come up with your own thing. So far, she has This Town and The Wonder Years. She's getting a lot of heat from The Wonder Years. Good for her. She was hanging out. She got her song listed on Elton John's Rocket Hour on his radio show. Good for you. Accolades. It's well deserved. I love the new stuff coming out. You can go back and listen to some of the older stuff of Melody Federer, but, you know, it's the new stuff. It's the new stuff that it's all about where you're at right now, especially in music. But it's fun to revisit that stuff to see how far a person has gone creatively. So, me personally, I went back and listened to her past stuff. And a lot of growth. She tries to tackle some big, heavy stuff, too. I mean, she does this thing. I feel like she still does it. I tried to mention in conversation, 1,000 songs for 1,000 strangers. She writes 1,000 songs. She's a great lyricist. She spits them out. We try to do a couple bits live in person. Honestly, she's a lot faster than I am. Good for you. But a lot of good things in store for Melody. She's already doing good things. And I think it's about time we recognize good people doing good things, because you never know what kind of storm that they might be in. And so Melody was gracious enough to have a conversation about her life and where she is at right now. And it's a tricky subject. And we got into it. Got a lot of raw emotions. Got into some nice feelings, maybe some TMI for a lot of people, but you know what? This is what you sign up for. When you hit play and you sign your Apple Podcast agreement when it's updated and you hit I agree and you didn't read it, that's why. You didn't read it. That's why we're going there. But everything about Melody Federer, go check her out, at Melody Federer on the old Instagrams. Give her a follow. She's out there on the interwebs. She's social. She does the thing. She exists. Go listen to her music. The Wonder Years is the latest thing. This Town is also out, too. There is a project in the future. It's happening, people. But you can go listen to music wherever you listen to your music. Facebook, Twitter, it all exists. YouTube. She's on Bandcamp. But more than anything, I beg you, listen to this conversation. Get to know Melody. But then also, go check out her music. All right, here we go.
Uh-oh, sorry. Somebody just rang the doorbell, and I don't know who it is. Sorry.
Ooh, make sure it's Amazon.
I have no idea who that would be. That's what I'm hoping, because they actually tried the doorknob. That's so weird.
No, you need to go check it out. Package.
Yeah, it's just packages. You're right.
Nice. I'm outside your door.
That would be so awesome.
Would it?
Washington, a guy telling
you. I hope
you're
recording this because this is just.
I love that. You love that because in my head, I'm thinking, okay, I know you're living in Washington and you think it's awesome that just some strange white guy is outside your house and your door.
Well, I saw your picture. You look cool or cute or attractive. It was sort of like a distant picture. So I don't really know what you look like up close, but in the picture on the website that I got to see for like a second before this, you know, you looked handsome. So
that's
I don't
really
mind
nice.
A handsome non-serial killer guy coming to the door. That's as long
nice.
As you don't have COVID. Yeah.
That's the ultimate serial killer. But I mean, I don't know.
No, you know what the ultimate serial killer is?
Tell me.
Spoiled milk. I just thought of that just now.
You dad me. Yeah. You dad the joke on me. Oh. I wish I could come up with dad jokes just as quick as that. I'm more of the dirty dad, which I don't know if that's even better. But,
ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. It can be. It gets me in trouble. I told a dead baby joke to my
kids. No, I hate those. Don't tell me that. I hate those. I'm actually on your Instagram now trying to find which one is you. I think I found you.
Yeah, that's me. Well, you know.
Oh, nice. Will be dads.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely got some dads on there. Some dad stuff kind of going on.
You've got a lot of personality.
I try.
I don't think you try. I think it's just natural.
Well, I think so. I mean, I think it's there for a little bit, but you know, you kind of always feel, I feel like you get this. You kind of always feel like you're always putting yourself out there. You're trying to make friends. And then in the end, like you walk away with no friends. Like you want to walk into the party and you want to do the thing. You want to, hey, here I am, world. And then it's just like, well, fuck me sideways. I came out empty handed.
I totally know what you mean.
Yeah. I really feel like that's the story of my life.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like I have one of those personalities that in a crowd I really light up. But then like after about an hour I'm sort of like exhausted with myself and
done.
I just want to leave. Gosh.
I do the same thing. I bet you do the same thing I do. I call it the Tuscaloosa slip. Okay.
Ooh.
Okay, so get ready.
Is that where you're from? No, you already told me where you're from.
I'm from Texas. No,
oh, yeah.
Southern Arkansas, East Texas. But I don't know why I call it Tuscaloosa. There's no reason. I just like the way that it rings out. Like just the way it flows out. Tuscaloosa slip.
Isn't that's in Florida, right? Or where is that?
Alabama.
Okay.
Yeah.
It
just has a nice flow to it. You're a songwriter. You get it. Tuscaloosa slip.
I like it.
All right.
What
so,
is it?
All right. So you know when you're at a party and everybody's just like, oh, let me go get Melody. Wait.
Brendan, I've never been to a party. Nobody ever invited me to a party. I don't know what you're talking about.
You're a songwriter. Use your imagination.
Okay.
Seriously.
I'm imagining what a party would be like. I've always dreamt of going to one.
Oh, I heard they're nice.
Tell me about them.
I heard they're nice this part of the year. It'd be nice to go to one.
It would be nice. Too bad that we're not invited to any.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I had a buddy like message me, hey, you want to come hang out? I said, nope. No, that doesn't sound good right now to me whatsoever.
Well, we could throw a party of two.
Just the Zoom party. Those are even the worst. Then you're like forced to talk to people, you know?
Yeah. No, but what's the Tuscaloosa slip?
Okay. So imagine you're at a party and like you've been there. You're there for a bit. And then somebody just like mentions your name and they're just like, oh, let me go get Melody. Wait a minute. Where's Melody? You just gave them the Tuscaloosa slip because you bounced.
Ooh,
you're gone.
Oh, that's the Irish goodbye.
Is it Irish goodbye? I like Tuscaloosa
that's the
slip.
Irish goodbye.
No way.
Yeah, yours has more of a ring to it, but same thing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that really is it. I am the king of ghosting. Like I mean, they call me Casper. I mean, like the whole situation at a party, and you and I are the same people. I promise, because we'll show up. We'll do this. You know what I mean? Like, we'll be the life of the party.
Oh, yeah.
People want to hang out with us, but after the hour set is done, after we feel like our set is done, we did our deed, bye. I'm good.
I'm actually admire that you just ghost. I always kind of panic and have to think of some excuse that sounds convincing, and then I feel kind of guilty about it. And so it's like, oh, man, shoot, I forgot. I forgot I left the garage door open, and I, oh man, I have, and then I just feel like so lame. I always admired those like veteran partiers, because my older brother, he was a real partier, and I just felt like there was this mystery that happened after I went to bed, because I would get, I would fall asleep and they would all just stay up, and the, those partiers that just seemed to party all night long. I just never understood that, but now I'm an adult. I've actually, you know, out-partied some of those partiers, meaning I thought, I'm going to just see how long I can go and see how long the party actually goes. And I outlasted who I thought would be the ultimate partier, and he really just went to bed at like 1. So I thought, okay, this isn't as hard as I thought. I, you know, anyway.
But I'm now just you're blabbering. Well, but now you're kind of like, oh, 9:30 is good. 10 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm done. Exactly, right? And yeah.
It's not worth it. I mean, anything after 11, like really, once we get to a certain age after 11, it's kind of like, well, what's the point? I mean, we're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over. Do we have to?
Yeah. I mean, once the initial thrill is gone, like, I love sleep. I just love to sleep when I can actually get to sleep. I just love it. I just read this really cool quote. What was it? I was actually writing a song about sleeping just now before this. And
you really love sleep. Wow. Write a song. That's amazing.
The quote is, one of the most adventurous things left to us is to go to bed, for no one can lay a hand on our dreams.
Ugh, that's disgusting. That deserves to be on a piece of shiplap wood. I mean, that's...
You don't like it? Why?
I mean,
it was sort of romantic. Like, nobody has power over your dreams. Even if you just work the worst job and you only get to eat ramen for every meal, you can go to bed and dream of being a king.
I don't know.
Or a queen.
Yeah, I mean, there is something like romanticized about it, right? It's beautiful. It flipped the script on me. You know, it starts off as one thing and then it becomes this one thing. But then I just imagine it being on the same wall as like Blessed or Home. Or like somebody over their bed or something.
That or is, please don't flush feminine product. From the sink. Yeah. Oh no, but you actually made me curious. So I looked up who said it, and it's this guy, Edward Lucas, and he was born to a Quaker family in London in 1868. So it makes sense. He was a Quaker. Maybe he didn't get to do much adventuring. So probably the most adventurous time of his life was when he went to sleep. And, yeah. You know.
And he's a serial killer because it just makes sense. I mean, Lucas Edwards is a Quaker. He's talking about somebody's dreams. There's somebody's asleep.
Okay.
Definitely a serial killer.
I don't know. I didn't read his whole bio, but I guess he's just a playwright and a poet and an editor, and who knows what happened in between. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of feel like this is your vibe. There's been a couple of things. I've been stalking you, speaking of serial killers.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like you're a creative at heart. Like, you really love, like, written words, because I was watching something. You spit out, like, a quote from a book or something. Like, it's just this, like, a thing of you. Like, this is a consistent thing that...
Nobody's ever pointed that out, but I do love quotes. I really, really do. And I love books, but I think it's because my dad is actually an author. And so he was always like, in fact, his first book was about quotes. It was America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations.
Holy shit. I mean, this is a real thing. This is dad.
Yeah, that's dad. So
I love quotes because he wrote a book about quotes.
Well, they were mostly compiled quotes from like the founding fathers.
Wow.
And things like that. So that's I've got insane. A lot of those quotes in my head. In fact, why don't you give me a situation and I'll give you a quote for it?
There's a dictator in office right now that wants to keep the office. So what's a quote?
Okay. With great power comes great responsibility. Wait, is that Star Wars?
That's Spider-Man.
What? Oh.
What?
No. I've got a better one. It's okay. I remember. Okay. Actually, I Googled it, but okay, it's absolute power corrupts and no. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
That's Lord Acton. Although I thought it was Thomas Jefferson, but I guess it's not. It's Lord Acton. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Yeah, I would have definitely said Star Wars. That sounds like a Chancellor Palpatine situation of absolute power.
It does. Wait, my turn. I'll give you a situation, and you got to give me a quote.
Oh, fuck. I don't have Google in front of me. All right, I got it. Let's do it.
You can make it up.
Yep.
But also it says great men are always bad men. That's sort of depressing. At least good it guys doesn't say great last. Women are always bad men.
Boom.
What?
Good guys finish last. Green Day. Billy Joel. Oh, that wasn't
Ooh.
It?
Like this. No, actually, okay. That's even more fun. You say something and we have to think of a lyric for the situation. Okay, ooh, give me a situation.
You're at a party and then you give him the old Tuscaloosa slip.
It's my party. I can cry if I want to. Cry if I want to.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, your turn. Wait, I got one for you. Okay.
Okay.
You show up to a date and the girl, like, you know, stays for the appetizer and then she leaves.
To the window, to the wall. She's not here after all. She's not bouncing on any balls. She just left.
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't know.
Any balls.
Yeah. Whoa. Well, I don't know. See, that's a trouble thing. See, I songwrite too, but I'm awful when it comes to lyrics because in a karaoke situation.
No, that was pretty good. I like that.
Well, I just end up
Are
making
Are you a songwriter as well?
I am, sad to say. Yes.
Oh, we should write sometime. I think that would be fun.
Are we setting a date right now?
Tell.
Is that what we're doing?
I think we definitely should next time I'm in Nashville.
I love that. It's a good plan. It's a good idea. Yeah. We're getting along. We're doing the thing. I own my own publishing, and you probably have more connects than I do, so let's do it.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
We can go get some Baja burritos.
Oh, you're killing me. Baja burrito. You know what's in Nash. Did you live here for a bit?
I lived there. I did, yeah, for like a year or two.
And then you just bounced. So you're from Texas. At one point you lived in Nashville. Dad's a book author. Wait, I want to know what mom does. Like who is this lady?
Well, Dad started out as a pastor and then he became the book author. And then my mom's so funny. She's a real firecracker, but she did just about everything. And now that I'm older, I appreciate her a lot more because she had four kids and my dad's a pastor and then he ran for Congress. And somehow she like managed to keep us all like dressed and in school and getting us to doctor's appointments on time and just always, you know, cooking dinner. And I look at her now, I'm like, how did she do that? She drank a lot of Diet Coke, I remember. And she's still alive, so I shouldn't. But when I was in first grade, she was a teacher when I was in kindergarten for like a year. Not my teacher, but I would go to her classroom. I would complain about this bug bite that I had so I could go see her and get some candy. And then she was, you know, like an insurance agent, and then she was a realtor, and then she was she had like a modeling agency for a minute, and then she just helps my dad with his books. But she would get kind of bored pretty quickly. And what's your mom do?
Superwoman. My mom. Well, my family dynamic is weird. It's different. Like, and nobody's ever.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. I mean, well, nobody's ever asked me this, like in the context of the show. So
nobody's ever asked me either.
Oh, well, aren't you?
Look at us.
Look at us.
Yeah, we're so cute.
Humans having conversations. And yeah, my mom has, she quit school in 11th grade. And then my dad quit school in 8th grade. And then my mom has her GED. And then she just kind of bounced around, like receptionist jobs, that kind of thing. Was a dental assistant at one point. Yeah. I mean, she just kind of bounced around, did just the Southern mama thing to kind of take care of the babies and everything else and kind of filled up time with extra income.
Well, what did your dad do?
He worked in forestry. He cleared roads, like, for the logging trucks. And then, like, he got laid off. And then he basically built a business doing the same thing that he was doing. And then the people that laid him off.
Cool.
Yeah, the cool part of it is that the people that laid him off eventually hired him to do jobs. So.
Oh, see? Look at that comeback.
I know. I was a little bit of a Merle Haggard, like, or maybe a, like, Johnny Paycheck, like, middle finger in the air, like, take this job and shove it, but hire me back. you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I come from a long line of rednecks. They just kind of just do and whatever they need to do, like to kind of get done. But what part of Texas are you from?
I like that. I'm from Dallas. What about you?
Yeah, I'm from East Texas, like Texarkana area.
So is that more country?
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, we're talking the red of the reds of the necks of Texas, for sure.
Is your neck actually red?
It was at one point because just working out there, just doing what just country people do out in pastures, you know, feed cows, mend fences, that kind
of
thing.
Did you feed cows and mend fences?
This was a whole life of me. I mean, I was like the country dude. I was on a tractor. I learned how to drive like by 6 years old. And so,
what?
Dude, 110%. Hey, this isn't about me. This is about you. But in the end, yeah, I think I can understand at least the Texas dynamic, but you grew up in Dallas. Like, that's 100% like city.
Well, it was Lewisville.
Okay, I get you. It's outside of Dallas.
I don't really know. I don't remember. Honestly, I only remember going to church and this Mexican food restaurant and being at home. That's pretty much it. Like, I have no other memories. And ponchos. Do you remember ponchos?
Oh, 110%. The flag. Done.
Yes, ponchos. We would go. There would be six of us, and we'd order, like, two buffet meals and then split them, you know. And they would just, like, load up the trays with tortillas and then those – oh, those sopapillas.
Oh, done.
Sopapillas. And then we would get the vanilla pudding and stuff it in the sopapillas.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You're speaking my fatty language. I mean, that was really that was the jam. I mean, that was like a expensive steak night, like where I'm from. Like, that's
really?
What, that
yeah.
was 110%. Like, that's what you did. You went to ponchos and you just got loaded up on sopapillas and you raised the flag as many times as possible.
Yeah. Oh! I forgot about the flag till this moment.
The flags are the selling point.
I totally forgot about you're bringing back a memory from like forever ago. The flag, I just remember the flag. I forgot. It's so exciting for me when I have a memory that I didn't that I haven't remembered.
You're welcome. Like,
so you literally just gave me this gift of I literally can see us sitting at that table and that little flag in the middle of the table to. Because I guess they bring you more sopapillas when you raise it.
You're winning. Like, this is it. And this was like the best. This was like modern America at its finest. Like, when you had a restaurant, you just raise a flag. You don't have to raise a hand. You don't even have to talk to them. It's like, boom. They just know.
Yeah. I do remember the lighting was pretty dim in the one we had, though. It was very, like, gray and dark.
Oh, it's all chinchy. You know what I'm saying? Like, 110%. Yeah. Yeah. But okay, so dad was he's a man of the cloth, and your mom's kind of doing the thing.
Well, he didn't wear a cloth. It was like non-denominational. They were raised Catholic in St. Louis, very Catholic, very Irish, German. Like, I have like tons of cousins. My dad had 10 brothers and sisters, but then he fell in love with my mom and they became like born again Christians. So they moved down to Texas and became like youth pastors. And then he became the pastor and we were all born there, but eventually we made our way back to St. Louis.
Oh, okay. And then you moved to St. Louis. Okay. Was he still preaching at that point?
No, he had kind of moved into author territory.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Are they still like believers and whatever they believe in? Is that still a thing? Are they even together? Are they still together?
Yeah, they actually are still together. They're like high school sweethearts. You don't sound excited about this at all.
No, I am because, I mean, it's always fascinating. I asked the question. I mean, I am.
It's your sound that you make after you're going,
Well, I mean, I'm just kind of formulating a plan in my head, I guess, more than anything.
Yeah, I'm amazed at them as well. Like, nobody's staying together. Like, everybody's splitting up during this freaking pandemic. I mean, I'm personally separated, which is really sad and hard, but also not sad and hard. It's I never imagined it for me. Oh, see, there's that sound again.
Well, what that means is like, well, okay, well, that's a little bit interesting. So, like, so you just got separated from something. I mean, was this a serious thing?
It was serious, yeah. We have a 4-year-old together. So it's quite sad. Yeah, we had her, she was unexpected. about a month into dating. A big surprise. The best surprise ever. I don't know. You have kids, right?
I own one, and it was a surprise, and I'm still in a fetal position over it. Like, it's...
That was us. That was totally us. Yeah. But it was like a month in, we find out I was really young, or I thought I was pretty young. And then, you know, we held on for dear life through a lot of job changes and moving and his job not working out. And it was hard, but we ended up here and yeah, finally just, I don't know, just sort of.
Yeah, I hear that.
It's hard to explain. I don't know. Are you married?
I am married. Yeah, I'm still working on my first marriage, but...
Oh, that's so happy.
Yeah.
God, now I feel so embarrassed for admitting my thing.
No, ugh. No. I mean, it's human.
I thought for sure you were separate. Just by the way you were like...
This guy's jaded. He's a gargoyle. He's got to be divorced.
I take it all back.
No, you don't. And I hope you wouldn't. That's incredible. I love that.
No, I'm so happy. Everything's perfect. I'm the Brady Bunch over here. Everything's great.
No, I don't feel that way. Cause I mean like it's the,
Yeah, I don't know why I let you know all that. Like I usually don't actually talk about that. I have a child because there's so many creeps online. Yeah. And I'm pretty young still. And people don't, I don't know. I just kind of don't talk about it too much because it's tough actually as a girl in the industry.
Right, right, right.
And if they see that you're a mom, they put you in a certain box and
right.
I'm not in that box.
That's a really weird thing. And I respect that. And we can go as far or as deep however you want, but I can definitely sympathize with that because we got preggers. And then we never intended. I mean, I could really care less about having a kid, like to be honest. And then it just kind of happened. And I loved how you tried to cover it up. Oh, this is beautiful. It's the best blessing in the world. And I'm over here thinking, no, it's not. Like, it's kind of a curse a little bit. And then, and especially in the heat of the moment, it's like, why is this happening to us? Why did the fairy sprinkle sperm just happen to just fall on us? And this is the thing. And our kid is 7 and we're still dealing with that. Like most of our parental or even relationship issues like spawn from the kid. You know, it's kind of like it's just trying to balance like one, what does a fucking parent do? Like, are we doing it right? Or is this the thing?
Right?
Like,
no handbook.
No. I mean, there's a Dr. Spock thing, but why do I want to listen to that guy? I mean, but then also we had this weird situation. This is where I can really sympathize because most people don't. Well, I talk about the kid and the wife every once in a while on the show, but I don't show that to the world because people are a little weird. Like people, like we've had an instance, we had a situation where somebody printed off like my social media like resume, like, you know, like, oh, I'm here playing with this person or I'm doing this thing. And she brought it to my wife's like work and wanted to talk about this. And so
that's weird.
It is such a weird thing. Like when you bring family into the mix of entertainment, it is a very weird dynamic where people kind of don't know where that line is. Like a Gen Pop, they don't know where that line is. And then, like, I feel like in your headspace where you're at, it's like, well, it's just easier not to bring it up because it just doesn't, like, bring any kind of issues, like, to the forefront. And then it's a little bit of this facade, too, because, I mean, you're in pop and alt and, like, the LA scene a lot more, right? I mean, it's not like you come to Nashville pretty often.
Yeah, I'm sort of, like, kind of genre agnostic.
Right.
That's like a phrase my cousin and I actually came up with because I had the hardest time figuring out, like, well, what exactly is my genre? It's sort of country and it's sort of alt and it's sort of, I don't know. And I've moved a lot and lived everywhere. So I think that's sort of in the music too. But no, but with her, like, she actually was, like, for me, the best thing that's ever happened to me because I was sort of a gypsy and she's actually brought so much stability to my life and purpose, and it makes me hustle even harder. And it makes me, especially now as a single mom, like I hustle hard. And since he and I had only been together a month, our whole relationship really was about her, and he was older than me. So in a way I feel like if we hadn't had her, maybe neither of us would have ever had children. So in that way, she was what kept us together. I mean, she's like this little ray of sunshine. But you and your wife probably had were together longer than a month, and it was probably you guys were in love and all this stuff. With he and I, we were like practically strangers. So our whole relationship was taking care of her. And yeah, and arguing, you know.
Right, right. Kids will do that to you. I mean, it's part of the kid situation because there's a lot of stress behind that. But then, yeah, 100%, I can agree with that as well. Like, there is this common bond of a child. And, you know, you can't get too mad at a child because they're just dumb. They're just sitting there. Like, that's it. You know, like, you can't get mad at that. Like, it's beautiful.
Yeah. And I read this thing recently that a lot of couples have conflict because a lot of stuff from your own childhood comes up when you become a parent. Like, and it doesn't surface until you have your own child and you're starting to get into parenting and disciplining and all this stuff. Then all this stuff from your childhood comes to the surface, and it often will clash with your partners of like, and it can be personal. Like maybe your mom never paid enough attention to you. So then if your kid is feeling needy, you want to give her attention, and maybe the other parent thinks you're spoiling that kid. Like, it's just, it could, you know, there's like so many triggers,
right?
You know?
Right. Yeah. And I feel like in that too, like, and you kind of said this as well, like your perspective on everything gets flipped. Now you're thinking about other human being.
Totally.
And then like with work and your art, like your whole perspective on that side of the brain completely flips the script.
I used to find kids sort of annoying. You know, I would think, oh, there's always snot coming out of their noses and they're just so needy. And I didn't even want kids. Now I have her and she is my favorite person in the world. And so now when I see any other child, it's totally different. I think that little person is someone's world. Like, that little person, it's not just some annoying kid, you know?
Mm. No, I'm with you. We're in the same headspace. Yeah. I mean, completely, because, I mean, kids are like a walking coronavirus. Like, that's who they are. And then I felt that same way as well. Like, yeah. I'm perfectly fine without another human being, like, just around. And then that just needs me all the time, not knowing that they need me all the time. But then, yeah, and then your the cheesy thing is, like, your priorities change, obviously. But I think the most interesting thing probably to me, and maybe in this with you, since, like, you're the pro songwriter, like, your perspective on things. Like, do you feel like even like your perspective has changed, like even in your music?
I honestly didn't even think about that till now. Do you feel like it's changed for you?
I mean, I know for me, I contemplated a lot more of, and I think it's kind of what you said earlier, like you start to realize things that kind of went on in your childhood, you know, either from like this parent or this situation. And I know for a fact I've applied that in some of my writings, like either if it's like it could fit in within the narrative that we created or whatever, of like, oh, well, I know what this emotion feels like because it was this. And then I put that box in a song. Like, I put that little square peg in that square hole and it fit perfectly.
Yeah. Or I know what you mean. Yeah.
But even for you though, I even know, like, listening back to some even the older stuff, like even from An American in Paris. And I know that was like, you know.
Oh boy, you listen to that.
Oh yeah, man. I listen to everything. So I mean, like, it's gone from, but that was a long time ago. And you know, when you
that's what I was living in Paris during that. Paris, France.
How old were you?
I was like 19.
Yeah, okay. And then I almost said a couple years, but it was a lot more. I mean, when the Dogwoods Bloom, that came out in 17, and there was like tremendous growth there. And obviously you've been riding with other people and stuff, but then this newer stuff and getting to this topic, especially like your perspective changing a little bit. I mean, between those three things and some of these songs, like, there has been, at least what I can see, like visual growth in an auditory sense. I mean, is that just time? Do you feel like that's like the kids situation? If we could try to pinpoint like whatever that is.
Wow, that's really cool. I remember I dated this German guy when I was like 18. And it was back when I used to have journals. And before I knew I was going to be a songwriter, I would just write just prose or poetry. And I would just write, run, write everything. Had this insatiable need to record everything. Almost, it was almost OCD. Like I always felt like I was needing to write everything down. And he said, you know, maybe you just need to live a little and your subconscious will work on what you need to say and it will come out when the time is right. And that sort of helped relax me a little. And then I think with songs, that's maybe what's happened for like my own artistic song. Because you never know when they're going to come and you never know what it's going to be. And it just kind of comes out when it's ready.
Right, right. So what I'm hearing, like from this German dude, like it was just really like, go live life. Go do the thing. And then when it's ready, it'll just kind of just pop up.
Yeah.
Do you buy into that? Do you really buy into that?
I think it's probably a combination. Probably all the many, many sessions, some that were really bad. I used to be really cocky. I'd go into these sessions. Now I look back on it. I got to do some of the coolest sessions in Nashville with some amazing writers. And I was so young and so cocky. And I thought my idea, we got to do my idea. Now I look back and I think, if I could just go back and just sit there and let them take the lead, you know, but that's stuff you learn with. It's almost like you were saying with your perspective, it's like you're on a board game of life or you're in this certain little island and then there comes a bridge and maybe it's marriage or maybe it's having a kid and you cross that bridge and you're in a new island that you can't know until you get there, you know, if that makes any sense.
I think so. And you got to live on that island. Like, you know.
You got to live on that island. I used to judge parents. I used to see parents on their phone before I was a mom and think, I'd never be on my phone if I was a parent. And now I think, oh my gosh, like I totally get it. Maybe she just has to text her husband. Maybe she's, you know, planning the dentist appointment. Maybe she's, maybe she hasn't had a break all day. And this is her one quiet moment to get to sit while her kids eat and be on her phone. And like, or I would judge people that got pregnant that weren't married. Then I got pregnant. Or I would judge people that got divorced and think, man, like how lame. They were probably just lazy or why didn't they try harder? Or that's so selfish. And now I've been through it. And it's like you have to live through those things to understand it and maybe to write about it. Although it's funny, sometimes you can seem to write about things without having lived it and it still resonate. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, that's empathy, right? So like, I don't know what a divorce looks like or what that feels like, but at least I can say that, well, my parents have been divorced. I understand separation. Okay. I understand heartache and heartbreak. And so even though I don't know what divorce is or like a partner, a really strong bond in a partnership feels like, at least I can take 10 of these things to maybe equal to one. And to me, that would be empathy, you know? And And so even like
for your parents split up?
Oh yeah.
How was that for you and has it made you want to work even harder at keeping your marriage good?
Yeah. Which that really is a great question because 100% she comes from a broken home too. So it's kind of like,
okay,
for us, we said in the beginning, you know, again, for us, divorce is not in the vocabulary. Like we don't even
see,
know.
I love that. See, that's something terrible that happened like with both of you guys and it's turned into a positive in a weird way.
You know, I think there's, for us, I think you just kind of get to that point. But the only way we got to that point is that we had to go through it, you know?
Right.
That's the shitty thing, you know? And I guess that's the beauty of it. You can take this maybe some people take as a dark thing. Some people celebrate divorce. I mean, I don't know what side of the fence you're on, but for us, it was both dark situations. And we just kind of said and committed to ourselves, like, we know this is going to work. It's at least worked this far. So let's just keep riding this train.
I love that. And I'm like rooting for you guys 100%. Like that's the goal. I would have wanted that for sure. But it takes two to kind of want to, it takes two, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. You know? So he just didn't want to like just to continue the partnership.
It's just, I don't know how to explain it. I knew like this doesn't feel good. You know, like when he comes home, I kind of avoid him. And we don't really touch and we never kiss and we don't talk. And if we do talk, we sort of clash and it really did get to that point where it just felt like we were total strangers, and I would felt like I would try, but maybe he felt like he was trying. I'd say, let's go to another counselor. Let's try to have a date night. But I think because he'd been so burned by the job losses and the shock of having a child unexpectedly, that it was all work, 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 you know, like that's all that mattered. And somewhere along the line, we just became strangers. And I'm out here living in this small town where I don't know anyone. And his whole family's out here. We moved out here for his job. And it just got hard because he's the person. He was my person, but he just never had the time or the energy left, or I don't know. He just kind of closed off. This is probably TMI. But
no, I mean, I love it. I mean, for what it's worth, because, I mean, it gets down to the true core, especially where you are, like, currently. And but that's a whole different emotion, right? I mean, it's kind of like I would feel like a little bit of abandonment a little bit. There's obviously loneliness in
but
there.
But even near the end, when it really was, okay, like, you know, we've tried, we're gonna separate. I remember that week, just, I was a wreck. I didn't sleep. I would cry. I would go in. We were in different rooms at that point. I'd say, come on, like, we got to try to make this work for her. Like, can't we try? Like, and he was just at that point, just, you know, we have tried.
Was it worth trying? I mean, do you feel like it was worth, like, to give it a shot?
I don't know. Cause I do think now, ironically, it is way better. Like, I'm a lot happier, even though it's recent. It still hits me that I wish we were a family, but I do think, would I have wanted to stay in that for the rest of my life and sort of never feel affection again and never feel like someone really wanted to be with me? Because I've been with guys that really loved me, and I know the difference, you know, or when someone's just there because they feel like they need to be. And I think that was hard for, like, my parents, for example, because they saw guys before that really loved me and would have. But for some reason, I fell for the challenge, the one that was the challenge.
Yeah, yeah, we always do that.
Yeah, like, that was what intrigued me about him in the beginning. And sadly, it's probably the reason we didn't work in the end, because he was very cold and sort of challenging. I thought, I can warm this guy up. I can win his heart, you know?
Yeah, yeah, right. Because I feel like, you know, being who you are as an artist, there's, and especially a songwriter, and I feel like I'm attaching that to you. I mean, do you feel like one outweighs the other, or there's more of you that's a songwriter than there is an artist? I guess before I go any further.
Oh, that's such a cool question. I know, even when I was younger, when people would ask what I wanted to do or what I did for a living, I would always say, I'm a songwriter, because I always felt like saying I'm a singer. I just didn't identify with that. I felt that always felt kind of one dimensional or sort of ditzy in a way. And what I cherish about whatever God's given me is writing. So yeah, probably actually a little more of the writer.
I would feel that too. I mean, like, if you take on things of, like, 1,000 songs, 1,000 strangers, and then, like, some of the writing stuff you've been done, I mean, I feel that. Even the Wonder Years, that's, like, to me, when I hear something like that, it's kind of like, okay, you're a songwriter. Like, you know what you did there. You're a songwriter. That's the thing. But I feel like, though, for a songwriter, there's always, like, this nurturing element, or, like, every songwriter I ever talked to, and I even feel this way too, you know, you rub shit on your face and then you kind of wonder, why do I have shit on my face?
What do you mean?
I kind of feel like, in some ways,
like we make ourselves suffer for the art. Is that what you mean?
In some way, yeah, I think so. Because,
like, subconsciously,
maybe it's a subconscious thing. Maybe it's, you know, and there's, you know, different people have different things or how they even create their art or their music. But even, like, in this context, do you feel like through this pain, like, of the separation and going through the deal? And I know you've probably been sitting on these songs for a while, but, you know, did any of that feed into your music or even make you, like, a better songwriter or just a better human, maybe in general, to really understand the full cycle of emotions?
I feel like we were together in the struggle when I wrote most of the songs. So it was before, you know, any decision I've made. Most of the songs on this album were when we were living in Nashville, actually, before we moved here. And so we were right in the middle of the struggle. So yeah, that was probably like processing that. But I think I was fighting for it in the songs. I think I was, you know, fighting for it to hopefully work.
I mean, that takes you in places, right? I mean, like in the creative headspace, like I know I would do this, like whatever energy I'm feeling from this outside thing, you almost have to take it with you because it's part of you. But then like, do you feed that energy in your music?
Oh yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, even like, I mean, just some of the stuff that people have heard, like from This Town or even The Wonder Years. I mean, there's drastic differences between those two. And one would almost think, oh, well, they're obviously about different things, right? I mean, but the emotions like in those songs, that's what's interesting to me, especially during this time of just your life just kind of happening.
Mm.
Is there any, do you feel like there's like a correlation? Because I feel like on like The Wonder Years, like the character's just kind of feeling like left in limbo, right? It's just, you're kind of left there to wonder. And then in This Town, like you can't wait to get away. Like there's definitely like this angsty feeling, right?
Wow, that's so interesting. Which is funny because yeah, I wrote the Wonder Years actually first. I wrote The Wonder Years probably actually 3 years ago. So it was, I wrote it quite a while ago and it just never, it wasn't ready yet and didn't have the right production. And so it was, yeah, we were living in California when I wrote that song. And I remember it coming in, me thinking, wow, this idea is special. And we were right in that wondering like exactly what the words say. Are the highs worth the lows? Are you going to be here? Are you going to stay? That's when it was really unsure. Then, yeah, This Town, it was getting a little more sure. Like, okay, this is not working.
Fuck this. I'm done. Get out. Yeah.
But
okay.
I do remember being in the kitchen, and I was about to go on a trip to L.A. from Nashville, and I said to him, I literally said, man, This Town always looks better when I'm leaving. Because, like, I remember him being like, oh, that's a cool line, you know. And I was like, oh, that is a cool line. And that's, you know, so then I wrote the song. So, yeah.
So now he gets a little bit of publishing because he could.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't get anything.
I'm joking. I'm joking. But that's a tricky field, right? Or is that a space that you feel comfortable in? Like for me, I feel like emotionally, I don't want to get on that roller coaster again. You know, like to try to write a song, or is it part of the thing too for you? Like you've lived through it, you lived through the life, and now it's just in your subconscious. And so when you sit down at a piece of paper and you go to write this thing down, it's just going to spew out, and it's just life.
Yeah, that's what I think. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Then yeah, that makes sense to me because, I mean, it just kind of feels like I feel like when I know when I'm writing a song, it's just kind of like. I'm just trying to grab at whatever the universe holds.
And no, that's exactly it. Yeah. Like, do you feel like an emotion? I feel like an emotion comes over me and I got to grab the tiger by its tail. I think that's a poem somebody said about grabbing a tiger or a dragon by its tail. Like, I got to catch it in that moment or it will be gone. That particular song or that particular, I won't remember it. I got to get it right then. The melody or the lyric or the word. I got to grab it then because it's like predestined for that. Not predestined, kind of like a sperm meeting an egg and then you get that particular kid. I feel like the idea like comes to your head and if you don't grab it right then, it might be a different child or I don't, or you don't get to have that child. It's just making sense. I don't know.
No, it's gone somewhere, right? Because I mean, do you feel like that you can compartmentalize pretty well then? Because I know I can't. Like, because if I'm going through the shit that you're going through, like, I feel like if I go back in my headspace or I force myself or maybe even subconsciously and go into this space to write X song and it has this emotion attached to it. Let's just say loneliness for the sake of this. And I'm kind of living with loneliness, like, for the rest of the day. Like, are you able to say, well, I'm going to at least think and feel lonely to get this thing across in the next 3 hours, and then boom, that's it?
I think when I write my best, it's I'm living in that emotion at the moment. Mm-hmm. So it's like either I just got in a fight with my boyfriend and we're not talking for a few hours and it's really bothering me and I have to exercise this emotion and I'm hitting my head against the wall and there's no solution coming. So then I write a song. Or maybe I'm on my period and I feel terrible and I want to die and I'm laying there in bed and I'm just very nostalgic and low energy, and then I'll get a sad feeling or a memory or something that kind of I just need to express, and then I'll put that down. Or, you know, if you're having a really awesome day, which, you know, obviously there aren't as many of those songs, songwriters. Yeah. But it's always hardest to write non-cheesy happy songs, right?
Like, right.
It's really hard. Are you good at up-tempo songs, like, or like happy songs?
I am, but it's all bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's because I can be that life of the party. And, you know, we said that earlier. Like, you can walk in for an hour and do the thing. That's what a happy song is for me. Like, if I sit there... And I'll just bullshit it, you know. All right, let's jump on a truck and do a boot scootin' boogie, and then this is it, you know. So 100%, I can do that, but that's not a real thing. And I guess for the sake of the song, it doesn't have to be a real thing. Like, people just want to get shit-faced and dance.
You're so right. Or my friend Lily once, another quote. God, I do quote a lot. But there's some quote, I don't know if it's Picasso or somebody's gonna make fun of me in this podcast, be like, she's got her quotes totally wrong. But it's kind of like, when I'm happy, I'm living life. I don't need to make art out of that. And I am happy for the most part these days. Like, I'm happier than I think I've ever been in my life, just with my daughter and kind of knowing my vocation now. I know who I am now. I kind of, But so I don't need to write about that when I'm happy. I need to write when I'm sad, you know, because I'm living when I'm happy. I'm fine. I'm good. I don't need to. Yeah.
That space of happiness. I mean, it kind of I almost wanted to say it has a bad rap, but it's almost like justified. You know what I mean? Like, because I feel like most of the quote unquote happy songs does feel a little BS. Right.
And I don't know why that is.
Well, I think it's impossible to be happy all the time. And so it does amaze me that, like, you know, if I do talk to an artist, and I just talked to one not that long ago, actually, there is not a sad song like in that guy's catalog. Like, and I brought it up. I was like, bro, who are you? You're an alien. Like, what is this thing? Are you Mormon? Like, is this the thing?
And what did he say?
I mean, he was just really like, no sad songs. It's just kind of like...
That's his thing?
It's his brand. It's his philosophy, you know?
Okay. See, that's the key word, brand. It feels like something branded.
Right.
You know, like, I'm going to write happy songs. That's going to be my thing. But then again, they say, like, if you want to be positive, smile, you know? So maybe there's a trick to it, like, by forcing yourself to... act happy, then you'll feel happy.
I don't know. My imagination immediately went to Ted Bundy, and he smiled all the time, and that dude was fucked up. So, I mean...
This is kind of funny, but I feel like I did an interview not long ago, and somehow Ted Bundy came up in that interview.
I almost brought it up earlier because you were in Washington, a white guy standing out in your front lawn.
Is he from Washington?
Yeah, he did most of his shtick in Washington.
Okay, let's not talk about him anymore. I'm such a wuss. Like, I'm this rom-com, you know, my daughter's the same way. Like, she hates the bad guys or the scary guys in the movies. And, like, just, so we, I don't know. I just don't, my dad would always say, trash in, trash out.
Like, yeah.
Don't fill your head with weird stuff.
Well, see, now that's even crazy and interesting, too. Like, you want to fill your headspace, like, with a rom-com. Let's just call it
but
that.
Then what comes out are sad, dramatic.
You're getting it. You know it.
Yeah, that doesn't really make sense, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, so it's like, that is part of the subconscious, right? I mean, is it the thing of, well, I'm going through the shit, and this is what I do. Because it, to me, like when I listen to your songs, it does feel, doesn't feel
how,
like.
How do you feel when you listen to, I've never asked anyone this ever. How do you feel when you listen to those songs?
Okay, let's just point one out. Maybe the Wonder Years, since it's a little okay. fresh on my mind.
This is so exciting. I've never asked someone this ever. Like,
yeah,
I'm excited.
For me, I always think of music like in film. And so I could see where the feel of the song would be like in a rom-com. Because it did make me feel like, oh, there is like a little sense of complacency a little bit. Like it's there's a point in the movie where everybody's just kind of, you know, just dealing with the circle of life in this moment. But then like when you look at the lyrics themselves, then it's like, oh shit, they're dealing with like a little bit of loneliness and isolation while there's another person in the room.
Wow. Yeah. You just nailed it. Whoa. Dang. Mr. Psychology over here.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife's a doctor. Wow. That has nothing
she
to do with
is?
Me.
Yeah. Is she actually a doctor?
Yeah. But it's like an education. It's not like, it's like a BS doctor, you know, it's not what? Like a real doctor.
What? That's so cool. That's hot.
Yeah,
that's
it is. I call her Dr. Hot Stuff. And I even tell her, but I tell her, you're not a real doctor, though. What do you know?
Man, there have been times I thought, oh, maybe I should just become a psychologist. I always admire those women who wear those cute little, I admire the women in the rom-coms, even though they're just actresses. They wear those little pin, what are they called? Pinstripe?
Just like a pantsuit? Like a,
no,
like
those
a,
like tight little skirts and those little blazers, and they have their morning coffee and they're rushing to the office and they have their annoying boss and, you know, it just seems so put together.
Right. Right.
And maybe that's the Hollywood version.
Oh, that's funny. But there, I mean, like even with that being said, does that line up, you think? Like, especially with the subconscious and then you try to feel I'm just calling it a void just because there's nothing there. Like, do you feel like that you're trying to fill your headspace, this void of like these rom-com things, but then you have this outpouring of just pretty raw emotions? Because I think what I was trying to say earlier, like when I listen to your songs, like it's a songwriter and it does feel personal. I don't know if the situations are autobiographical. It doesn't matter, but it's making me feel these emotions pretty raw. And like, I've been there. Like, I know what that emotion feels like, even though I don't know the exact circumstance. And I'd rather just keep that a mystery, you know, from the songwriter, because that's way cooler than you like spelling it out. You know what I'm saying?
Then I'm not going to spell it out for sure.
I don't think so. I don't think you have to. I don't think anybody should really have to like spell out the music, right? So, but I think the emotion of the music so far, it's a little bit of, well, where does it come from? I mean, is it something like you try to close in and then you allow this 3-hour window to freely express, for instance, the Wonder Years? Like, this is it.
No, it's kind of like the whole catching the tiger by the tail. Like, it could come at any moment. It could come at any moment and I just have to catch it. And that's, and usually if it's good for me, it comes almost complete from start to finish. So I'll literally, I'll have the idea. I'll sit down with the guitar and it will kind of pour out verse, chorus, and be kind of done.
Do you feel like, what is that? It's not, what is it called? Like you're just sitting at your guitar and you just write down words. Like there's no structure to it. It's more of like a free flow kind of writing.
Yeah. Or I'll hit record and it'll come out. And that's how those are the rare ones.
Yeah.
The good ones.
That's a tough thing to do. I know here in Nashville, like, you know, with the co-write situation.
Yeah, I can't do that in those. But you can bring, like, an idea you started like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you mostly write by yourself? Like, especially most of these songs, like, from the record?
I feel like I've done so many co-write sessions in my life. And for some reason, I guess the best songs I write are still kind of by myself. But I think it's made me a better writer writing with co-writers. I have one co-writer that I just love, Thomas Duvet, and he lives in Nashville. And
I know that name. Why do I know that name?
He's worked with a million people.
Okay. Okay.
But he's the only person I've been able to feel comfortable enough that I feel like I can just be totally vulnerable. We can take our time. We can go get Baja. We can come back. I can say something stupid. I can say something smart. And we just click. And that's I've had cool. to write with hundreds of people. And I've found that maybe three times where you just like click and make each other better
yeah.
as writers. Because I add to his and he adds to mine. But yeah, I think my next single might be one that we wrote together.
That's cool. Okay. Yeah. I mean, you learn things about yourself, especially when you write by yourself. I know you kind of hang around with Burt Bacharach and that thing, but have you written with Daniel Tashin?
He's another one that I love.
Yeah. I bet he's great.
I haven't really written with Daniel, but I did introduce Daniel and Burt to each other.
Oh, really? That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah. I had been writing with Burt and we had some songs and he wanted to get them produced. And I knew Daniel had liked, I know Daniel via my really good buddy, Jason Lenning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or one of my favorite co-writers. And they're buddies. They're in a band together. And we were at a barbecue and he was saying how he loved Burt Bacharach and he saw that I had been working with him. So I told Burt, hey, we should get this Daniel guy to produce the songs. He just did the Casey record, blah, blah. So and then they kind of hit it off and now they're doing their own thing. So that's pretty cool.
That is cool. Yeah. I feel like you and Daniel could get along. I mean, I don't know what that would sound like, but I don't know. There's something cool there, or even like Ian Fitchick, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. They worked on they produced the Burt song that I put out.
Oh really? Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense.
But I feel like Daniel and I are so similar that maybe we would actually clash as writers. I feel like our personalities are kind of similar, almost too similar. So like we haven't really written. I think we tried once or twice and maybe we're too similar. So like my strength meets his strength. So there's nobody balancing out the other. But maybe we just didn't have enough time to write. Or I think we did it like once. It was a long time ago. Who knows?
Yeah, that's always a tricky situation. Like, do you lead? You kind of just set back, and especially you only have like one shot to do it. Like that's tough.
Yeah, but he's great. So anyway, I'm glad they're doing their thing.
Yeah, but you're doing your thing. It's doing it. You're doing it. That's the only reason we're talking. I fell in love with it. I kind of knew
means so much because you're kind of like a rock star. Like, I mean, you've been doing these with some of my favorite current Nashville people, like Tennille.
Yeah, she's great.
So good. Brandi Clark. Yeah. Like, I mean, I feel honored to be among these people.
This was a no-brainer. Yeah, Emily introduced you to me, and it was, I think it was this town. And I said, oh, yeah, this is different. I'm into it. Yeah, I mean, let's set this up. But, yeah, we finally got to it. And we're doing it now. And you totally deserve to, like, whatever this thing is, like, in your headspace, you should be here. Like, it just makes sense.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice. And this is by far a favorite interview I've done. Like, really, you're so easy to talk to. I feel like I'm talking to one of my best friends, you know, or something. Like, just really just absolutely easy to talk to. So thank you. Super fun. We've talked for like an hour.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm about to hang up on you.
I mean, figured. I was about to hang up on you.
We laughed, we cried, we did the thing, got to know Melody. Appreciate Melody for coming on the show and talking a little bit about her life, but also some of that personal stuff in the headspace and all that TMI good stuff, clickbait-worthy stuff that is great and good to know. Appreciate Melody. Melody Federer, her music is out right now. More music is out in the future. Right now, you can listen to This Town and The Wonder Years. Go check it out. Go give her a follow at Melody Federer online, social media. And as well as for us, go give us a follow at SMI Podcast, Twitter, Facebook, at Unofficial Brandon on Instagram and TikTok. But we also have our website, smipodcast.com, where you can drop us an email. But you can also check out some of the other content that we have there. All I ever ask, always, 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 at the end of this thing, if you know somebody that kind of feels like the headspace or you feel like they might get something out of the conversation, all I ever ask is just share it. Just do your part. Just share it. Then I'll ask for money one day, but right now, it's just to share it. One day, I'll be asking for donations. It will happen. But until then, share it if you think somebody can get something out of it. And also subscribe in your favorite podcast platform, because we have episodes out every Tuesday and then also sprinkled some in between the weeks. But stay safe out there, folks. Be healthy, be nice, be kind. Like I said before, just don't be an asshole. We got enough of them. All right. Until next week, happy surviving.